Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker here. Welcome to Waypoint Radio. It is Monday morning. I'm gonna guess it is May 22nd.
You got it.
I got it. It's episode 67.
You got it.
I don't have a computer in front of me. I have all this information in my head.
I'm so proud, though.
Thank you. I did my best.
It's a rainy Monday. It's hard to remember anything on a rainy Monday.
So last week was like hot here, right?
It was like 90 degrees.
I dodged it. I went to LA.
Actual
and it was
90.
Like 60 in LA somehow. And I came back and it was raining. So I think I just brought the bad weather with me everywhere I go.
You did it.
Joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
Also joining me via the internet, Rob Zachney, Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going?
Well, it's you got me killed in Battleground, so...
Car got you killed.
What a bad
and then a car got me killed. Listen.
Spent a lot of time in a hospital looking for a scope. Really helped when the car ran over my face.
That's not true.
I don't think anyone was in that car, by the way. I think that car is like the Battlegrounds equivalent of like when in Harry Potter that car goes feral in the forest.
And like,
I think that's what happened. Like that car was waiting for you.
Out to get us.
Does that car have a name?
Do you know?
Is it like Caronius Fatalis? Like, is
it's
that
like a Roman car in your world?
That's what everything is called in Harry Potter.
Oh, I see.
Ridley Scott's next crappy alien movie was about a Roman car.
Ridley Scott's.
Based on a Stephen King novel. It's going to be great.
Antonius.
God.
There you go.
How's everybody doing this morning?
I'm good because I beat Prey.
You beat Prey?
48 hours.
I'm so
Danielle.
Proud.
Danielle.
And then I started playing it again.
Danielle, I beat that game yesterday morning. I did it in 20 hours. What did you do for another 28 hours in that game?
All the side quests. I found all the bodies.
I did those. Yeah, that's fine. You know what? People take different
time.
You love the environment?
Enjoy myself.
Yes.
No, I get how that game can take forever because I did a side quest in the Guts.
Fuck the Guts.
Yep.
Let me put this up.
Oh, my God.
Fuck the Guts.
Like,
put it on blast right now.
But you know what?
Zero G shit outside the station was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I like being in outer
space.
Because
you orient yourself.
Yes, the Guts fucking blows.
The
little side sections
were appropriately named.
When you're, yeah, uh-huh.
Guts, they could have been called the bowels.
They could have been called
the bowels. Might have been,
There's the little cool side sections where like the magnetosphere and stuff like that. Totally cool. But the actual like core Guts.
No, the magnetosphere can go to hell too. That thing sucked, okay? That thing was just annoying. It's like a big zapper that goes off every 10 seconds.
Somebody should have invested in hacking, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I was max invested in that. It's just I had to keep pressing the button. It was like in The Expanse when the dude's got the nuke and he has to keep like shutting the damn nuke off.
It's
that was my experience
with
magnetosphere.
You just hit it once and you go get the thing and it's good. My point is there are cool things around the Guts, but you're right. Orienting yourself in those weird tubes is
The thing I'll say about the Guts, though, is it was humbling. Because, like, I think after a lifetime of gaming, I'm like, oh, I've got amazing, like, sense of direction. And, like, gaming has made me, like, a superhuman when it comes to this kind of navigation. Turns out you spin me around, like, twice in a zero-G environment. I have no idea where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough. The Guts, for people who haven't played through Prey, is like a travel system of tubes that connects this space station. So when you can't use the elevator or whatever, or there's no direct door access, there is these tunnel system, this big weird tunnel system that runs the whole length of the thing. And you can get turned around in there. There are quests to find bodies in there
stuff. That's the part. Like, the main quest stuff in the Guts was fine. It was always pretty obvious where to go. But it was when it was finding good old Mr. Dalton.
Yes.
That's what took.
You should have just done what I did. The first time you went through and couldn't find him, you looked up on a YouTube video and you moved on with your life. That's how I beat that game in 20 hours instead of 48. I didn't look for Dalton.
The truth comes up.
I went all human, completely all human.
Oh, yeah, that's
I took
the other
my
reason.
Sweet time.
That's the other reason.
And I maxed
you
out like every human tech.
You use no alien powers.
None.
Which let me tell you, they're really useful.
Oh, I'm playing with them now. Don't worry.
Are you doing another
playthrough? I played 48 hours. I beat it three times with three different endings, and now I'm playing through entirely differently.
Okay.
Prey is real good.
Did you do the bad ending? Did you go back and do it?
I went back and did like a not quite 100% amazing ending, and actually it's pretty close. So
yeah, okay. Yeah. That game, we should talk about it at length in like a spoilery way.
Yeah, let's do a spoiler cast someday.
At some point soon, because we've all beaten it now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rob is still in it, right?
Oh, Rob is not beating it.
He's doing what I'm doing.
I'm trying to find John Dalton.
You'll find him.
Trying to find Mr. Dalton.
It's like a mime. I'm just like padding along the walls. Like John Dalton's like 5 meters on the other side of this wall.
He really is there.
Okay. He's like under a thing that you don't realize you can go under. Yeah. There's a little compartment behind a thing. There's like the tube splits, and one of them has an under area that opens up into like a little alcove. That's all I'm going to tell you.
That's where he is.
You'll get there. Okay, do you know where it turns left, where it curves?
Yes.
You know the point. It's under there. It's like under like the back there. So instead of going in, you go under that space, and then you find him. It's unbelievable. I did this 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And like, even inside of the hours of the games, like 10 hours of gameplay ago, and it's burned into my fucking mind because that quest sucks.
I know.
And all he gives you is a weapon that I already had in the game.
Yeah, it turns out. Fucking the Q beam is cool.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong.
But you knew what happened to him. See, this is why Prey was so good. I cared about all the people.
I cared about.
I read every email. I listened to everything. What, really?
Yeah, the ones who have faces who you meet, the ones that those people know.
You didn't care about like the sad nerd who you never meet who like spent too much time making the flex foam bolts or whatever they were.
No, that's not a character. That's an event.
Fine.
I think that's a neat event.
You don't care about the people of Talos One, then fine.
You know who else doesn't? Talos One doesn't care about the people of Talos One.
That's part of what made them so tragic.
I care about the company. I care about Transtar.
Yeah.
I don't care about half those people are three emails.
Half of those people are three emails.
So now we know that Austin's actually the android on this Weyland Yutani podcast.
That's what it is.
No, I'm not.
Thanks, David.
Very clearly it's Danielle because she has a programming thing that's like, oh, I must respect all human life. Here's the secret about humans. They don't respect all human life. That's how you can tell it's a real human.
And that's what makes it better to respect human life. To be more human than human.
Did you hear her voice just now? She says, that is why it is good to respect all human life. It is me, Danielle, the robot.
I'm just marveling the change that Battlegrounds has wrought on you, Austin. Like,
it's really
in three weeks.
I thought you were a humanist.
In 3 weeks, this podcast is going to look like the end of Apocalypse Now. Like, it's just going to be Austin sitting in the shadows like, are my methods unsound?
Video games.
Woo.
Oh, boy. I've been playing other video games besides Prey, besides Battlegrounds. Patrick is like leaning forward because he knows the words I'm about to say. I just let him talk about Dead Cells.
Oh man.
Tell me about Dead Cells.
Is it as good as Prey?
Did you already write about it once? You streamed it.
I streamed it on Friday. There was a review that went up on Polygon by Justin McElroy in which he, like, in the year 2017, the year of our gaming lord of so many good games, Justin had the audacity to say, this is the most fun I've had with a video game this year, which is like, for folks that I trust, like game critics that I enjoy, if somehow they say that, it's like, gee, okay, like, I'm going to read your review. And so I read his review, and then I like immediately hit a roadblock, which is like, oh, this game's in early access, which for a single-player game is almost universally a red flag for me, both because I prefer to wait for single-player games to just be quote-unquote done or whatever they consider to be done. And then also just there are so many games, like adding unfinished games onto the pile of games that are already finished, I find just to be a little too much. But his pitch was like, it already feels like a complete game that's just going to get better. And so Dead Cells, like in the shortest sort of elevator pitch, is like Rogue Legacy, which Rogue Legacy was already a roguelike set in Symphony of the Night Castlevania. Dead Cells is like, it's a roguelike with like Super Castlevania 4.
Yeah. Or like Rondo sort of Blood.
Yeah. Like it's like classic, like pre sprawling Castlevania, where you're kind of just going left to right. There's a little bit of up and down, but mostly you're just kind of progressing through an environment. And it's just, it has unbelievable, like, you know, it's that 16-bit ish aesthetic, but like, the 16-bit, if the technology was a lot better and allowed them to do a lot more with the animation.
Really great lighting, really great effects. Like, it's gorgeous.
And it's so much fun to play. Like, it is just like, and that's part of the article I'm writing about today that goes up on the site is basically, like, it doesn't feel like an early access game, which is, like, the best pitch for an early access game, which is, like, it's a game that's already great in a lot of ways that's only going to get better as they add more weapons and tweaks and NPCs and all that stuff. But it's, you know, it's it Each run, like the six or seven runs I've done so far, have felt like incredibly fun and varied. Like what is it's helping crystallize for me a problem I had with like Flint Hook, which was a game that I wasn't sure if I disliked the fact that it was in a roguelike structure, and I'm just tired of a lot of indie games with good mechanics putting themselves in a roguelike structure, or was it possible that they did the roguelike structure improperly and they just didn't get to write the alchemy of a roguelike?
That is what I love about this game right now.
It proves that I think Flint Hook did the roguelike alchemy wrong, and that Dead Cells gets the roguelike alchemy right. Whereas, like, Dead Cells would be also a good game set in a structured Shovel Knight, handcrafted world.
Yep.
But I don't feel like it's less of a game or less interesting, potentially more interesting, but, like, it's irrelevant. Like, I'm not bogged down by its structure. I'm just enjoying the game, and the structure is enhancing the game. And I think it's because like it gets that alchemy right in a way that Flint Hook did not.
That is exactly why I'm loving this game right now too. So I put probably not as much time as you, but I put a few hours into it over the weekend. It kind of blew up last week. People started talking about it, and I was like dying because it's out on Mac, and I only had my work laptop with me. I like, came home, and like the first night I was back, Saturday night, I like, installed Dead Cells. I was like, I'll just do a quick run. And then 3 hours later, of course, like, and the thing for me is exactly what you said, Patrick, which is I've talked about this before when it comes to like the phrase like open world fatigue. One of my pet peeves in games criticism is when we as players and writers retreat to the very easy language of, oh, I'm bored of this type of thing right now. And that's not to say that you can't be bored of a certain type of thing. People get bored. Like, that is a real thing. But often my follow-up to that is always like, are you sure you're bored of the genre or of the style of thing or of the feature? Or could it be that this is just really bad and we don't have the language to talk about it?
Right.
Yet? Right, like,
the
I know...
The feature or the game itself?
Either, both, okay, or the genre, the feature or the genre. So, like, for instance, Danielle, you had really great language to explain why you didn't like, what was the, not Banjo-Kazooie, the ukulele, which is like, it doesn't have the verticality of the Banjo-Kazooie games.
And the depth, and the depth. A lot of ways.
Right, and like, oh, those are really good, clean words in which I understand what you're saying is different from Banjo-Kazooie to ukulele. But I think that because for so many people, roguelikes or this sort of structure in which it's run-based, in which there's permadeath, in which there's procedural generation of the levels, in which you're getting items and learning how to use different item sets and different move sets and all that stuff, and figuring out different builds, that is still very new for most of us. Platformers have been around for 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah.
And roguelikes have been also, but they've only been in the spotlight for 5 or so. And so I think for a lot of people, it feels like we're bored of the genre when a bad one comes because we don't necessarily have the checklist to say why it's not working for us.
Well, and that's when I think about, you know, when I was trying, because I wanted to write an article for like the last week about like my problems with Flint Hook and Strafe,
right?
And like, is this a roguelike problem? And I would get a paragraph or two in and just be like, I don't feel like I have the language to explain, because all I would get, I would like, I'm going to spend 800 words saying I like Spelunky, right? Which is not, which is not an answer. Like, it's more that you know. And I think like this conversation and playing Dead Cells and playing Flint Hook and playing Strafe have helped me come to the realization that it's actually like the alchemy of a roguelike. And like more specifically, when I think about Spelunky, when I think about Flint Hook, when I think about Dead Cells, it is a variety of play per run is incredibly critical to what I find enjoyable about those games, in which like when I start Spelunky and I start fresh, the runs that I've had that are successful are because they're the way I got there, the method of accomplishing success was different every time, or had enough variation that it felt completely different. In Flint Hook, I could base a character, like, there wasn't enough variety per run, and then the level design was not interesting enough to make up for that, and Dead Cells gets that balance right, where it's like, I don't know what weapon I'm going to get to start with, but I will find a way to make it work, and, like, the game makes all of those different options fun to you, and, like, that's when I start to come up with the language that allows me to explain why like a Flint Hook doesn't work for me, but a Dead Cells does.
And it's so weird because like the basic feeling of Flint Hook is so good. Like flinging yourself around feels great, but it just doesn't have that second thing, that second set of things that lifts it to be a really good roguelite. And it's been really interesting for me to see people kind of do this because I've played roguelikes, like traditional top-down ASCII roguelikes for 15 years or something. And had to do this back then when I was like, I really like Sheeran the Wanderer, but I'm bouncing off of Angband, which is like a very popular roguelike inside of that community. Why am I doing that? What is different about these two games? Why am I into Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup? Roguelikes have weird names.
Understandable.
And like wrapping your head around those things for me was like really useful. And I almost wish that there was like a roguelike boot camp that I could put people through where like you could learn what the history of roguelikes is, there's a really good book actually about the history of roguelikes by a writer who's written for us a couple of times, David Craddock, who also has written like a Diablo book. Great, David L. Craddock, really good writer. Check out his roguelike book if you're curious about this stuff, which kind of digs into like the core, like first four or five major roguelikes that also kind of explains how those games are struggling with this stuff. Like, how do they differentiate themselves? How do they figure out like how to appeal to a different audience? And also just like the technology, the history of technology behind it, of like them growing up on college campuses and being traded on discs and all that stuff. It's really fascinating.
As it turns out, there were roguelikes before Spelunky and Binding of Isaac.
apparently.
So according to some book.
But you know, the funny thing for me is like I bounced off of Binding of Isaac. I bounced off of Rogue Legacy. And playing this has made me feel better about that because I felt kind of broken because everyone I know loved Rogue Legacy.
Rogue Legacy, in retrospect, had like pretty poor mechanics. It felt very – well, more specifically, it was very floaty in a way that I think like if you come from like the Mega Man school of like platformers, like floatiness is often like just not only like something you bounce off of, but you think something is antithetical to like a lot of those types of platformers.
Right.
And Dead Cells like feels very good, is not floaty, and like if you bounced off Rogue Legacy but liked the idea of like this, you know, you're upgrading various parts of your character and unlocking things that make your subsequent runs better. I think Dead Cells is a better Rogue Legacy. If you found some of that interesting but bounced off it, perhaps mechanically.
Yeah, I think it's just beautiful. Like, people should at least go watch your stream of it because of how gorgeous the game is and how beautiful the design is. I know you kind of disagree with some of Justin McElroy's Dark Souls comparisons.
I don't think it holds. I think Dark Souls is and this is not just Justin. It's a lot of people. Like,
Dark Souls
is used as a stand-in for like. You die like in weird ways. Dark Souls is being used as a stand-in for roguelike, which is like you die and start over and lose things, which is fine. Like, it's a shorthand. Shorthands get mixed up and are used in different ways. But
totally.
For like people that know what Dark Souls is, I'm not saying Justin doesn't. I'm not showing shade.
Shots
at the McElroys.
Shots fired.
But it is not a Dark Souls like. Game. Like, it's not a Souls-like. It doesn't share a lot of...
The one place where it does feel like that, though, is aesthetically, I think, which is, like, the crumbling ruins of a dark fantasy world, huge giants with spears in them that aren't really explained, strange NPCs like the Collector. Like, though, the sort of tone of that dark fantasy world feels like Dark Souls to me.
It's funny to me because I hear Dark Souls. I know nothing about it.
Dark Souls.
You know, it's about, you know, Sal. I don't know, Sal. He goes to the dark side.
Hey, welcome to Dark South. What do you want, pastrami?
We sell some heads over here.
You want some empty heads?
Empty
them out of the bread or the brains, filled it with bread.
This beautiful, delicious brain sandwich.
Delicious.
I don't know what your problem is.
Providence is the Dark Souls of Boston.
It really is. But I hear Dark Cells, and I think this is Metroid. It's like batteries and cells. I should have thought, like, cells as in human cells that are now splayed across an arena because there's blood there.
There's blood there, yeah.
I understand.
You collect cells. You collect, like, cells from enemies. It's weird. It's a weird system.
Definitely the Metroid comparisons are not unfair, too. Like, there are, like, some of the items you pick up when you defeat certain mini-bosses, a lot, like, there are objects you'll find during runs that all you can do is, I think, pet them? I forget what the...
Rub. There's
rub.
A rub
you can
button.
Rub them? There's a rub button?
You can rub yourselves.
Rub
like, you'll find these little, like, these mounds of slime, and all you can do is rub it. And I thought on my first couple of runs, like, oh, this must be, like, a random chance that, like, it dumps out, like, a cool item or something like that. And I'd keep rubbing this mound of slime, and nothing's happening. And then you later find out you defeat a mini-boss that gives you an item that turns the mound of slime into this, like, a vine that you can climb up. And then that suddenly transforms...
That's cool.
The like initial areas that you run into, because suddenly you don't have to go from 1A to 2A. You can go from 1A to...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
4A, you know, like, you start, the world map starts expanding and changing in interesting ways. And I still struggle with the fact that I would still prefer to, like, wait till, like, they're done and, like, see how it goes. But, like, if folks are interested, like, I don't, like, this isn't going to be something where you buy it and you're going to regret the time you put into it. It still may be a better game a year from now, but it's in a really, really good game right now that actually, in some ways, might be fast if you... The fact that it has so mechanically sound up front, it might be kind of fun and interesting to watch how it changes as they go through that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what else is happening right now? What are you playing, Danielle? What are you playing, Rob?
Yeah, let's hear what Rob's playing, because I know he's in a Persona
moment.
Oh, are
you still...
He's Persona and Prey. He's doing a double P.
Double P's.
Right now.
Yeah, but the big... So
no,
I haven't had too
no.
much time to...
I just want... No, just no double P's.
I'm sorry,
P's.
Dark Cell. I'm sorry.
What about a P? No, still bad.
P playthrough. P.
How's Persona going?
It's going just fine. I haven't had a chance to put too much time into it this past week. The thing that actually, like, literally just before the show, I was sort of getting into. I've been starting to dip my toe in Endless Space 2.
Ooh,
oh.
I'm interested in that.
Yeah.
I like space. I like 4Xs sometimes. I love Endless Legend, which is the last full big strategy game by this developer.
Yeah, and I think the thing that sets Amplitude apart from a lot of people working in this space is Amplitude are very much about form as well as function. And that comes through loud and clear with this game. I don't know if it's because this is the first game they've made with Sega, and maybe their budget is a little higher.
Oh, interesting.
But, like, the resources that have been put into little enhancements and giving each faction's identity is pretty impressive. Like, I just started a game as the Human Empire, very industrialist, militaristic. Like, they looked vanilla, so a good faction to learn the game with. But
yeah, and then you watch that intro movie. Yeah,
there's a great...
tell me about it, because it's so good.
Yeah, so it opens with this... very Starship Troopers-esque, like, propaganda video celebrating the virtues of this human Imperium. And it has this very, like, slick aesthetic. I'm trying to think of what... there are a lot of, like, little trailers that use this aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like motion graphics-y in the sense of, like, it's like someone giving a really, like, slick presentation. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the
silhouetted, it's like, it's just, like, flat, like, silhouettes of planes strike across the sky, and there's three lines, and then the three lines turn on their side, and now it's, like, three ranks of people
very
walking
stylized,
towards you.
Very, yeah.
It's also totally the, hire more women guards type video of, like, takedown of, like, sort of militaristic weaponized neoliberalism.
Yeah,
because,
totally.
Like, the video is very, like, inclusive, and, like, people of all different, like, races and genders are doing really militarized shit. So it's like...
you can all be part of our empire.
You can be a strong, proud, independent black woman in a mech standing on a hill of skulls. That's
right.
You
know, a black woman's boot can stand on the back of your shitty alien neck.
There you go.
You know, like,
there
that's definitely the empire that they've built.
Wow.
So what's amazing, though, is that's the way that intro video works. And then if you change to a different faction, that intro video is not in the same style. I expected it to all be this very stylized, like, hyper slick presentation thing. And I, like, oh, what do the tree people have? And they just have this, like, amazing, slow, like, narration of being tree people for thousands of years and, like, finally taking a stand. Or there's a species, there's a culture that exists in, like, not negative space, but, like, abstract space. They basically live in the realm of imaginary numbers. And and someone's super secret science program cut into that place, and the void entered into it. And now they're like, fuck that, we have to come out and seal this. And then you can play as that faction, and that is just, like, sweeping, slow, like, very thoughtful, beautifully drawn, like, not stylized, but, like, realized. kind of abstract space stuff.
And
like,
is,
that shift is really cool.
Yeah.
And this is where a lot of these games, I think, sort of stumble, is that a lot of them, like, I think Beyond Earth is your perfect example.
Yeah.
Beyond Earth has all these different factions, and it has no sense of what any of those factions mean. They're all basically the same faction. Like, it's a small bonus, but it's all...
I'm good at ocean stuff, you're good at mechs, and you're good at, like, culture, and you get 3 points of culture points versus right. you get 3 points of mech points, and that's the big difference.
Whereas the races in this game, sort of like an Endless Legend, interact with the resources and mechanics of the game in sometimes really profoundly different ways. And that can also...
Can you give an example of that?
So the Vodiani, who I'm pretty sure are tied into a faction that's in Endless Legend.
Yeah, it's like the merchant faction in Endless Legend was similar to that, right?
I think something like that. But anyway, they're not... I haven't played as them, but apparently... They don't even colonize planets, which I don't understand how that's going to work, because the entire game appears to be about colonizing planets. Not these guys. These guys fly around in great arc ships
nice.
Because they are... Like, God, the backstory on these things is so cool. So,
are they the space mafia?
No. Well...
Okay.
Space arc mafia.
There's definitely one intro that I watched that was just like a mobster meeting the family, like doing the whole... thing.
This is a little more
big Paul Ryan fans. Okay,
religious right. zealotry, I would
Dark
say,
sale.
At least in the
yeah.
in the way they interact with me. But
okay.
The cool backstory on them is, so they
you're
were
right,
very advanced,
right.
they were very industrial, and they totally hosed themselves. Like they basically strip mined their way through the galaxy, and then ecological disaster caught up with them, disease caught up with them, and they were like about to get wiped out. Except right at the moment they're about to go extinct, they find. These like super magical suits, these like biotic
right.
suits from a precursor race
yeah.
that save them. And so now they're sealed inside these suits and they have to fly around their arc ships, but they can't survive outside their arcs and they can't survive outside their suits.
I think that they might be tied to the like Dust Knights or whatever they
yes.
were called
yes.
in Endless Legend, which is one of my favorite factions. So this game, this series has a thing called Dust. That's what ties all the Endless games together, which is like spice in Dune or something,
okay.
right? Like
yeah.
mystical, like special.
Most of the time it functions
fully
as money.
Understand.
Most of the time it functions as money. It's a way to be like, oh, I'm building this new district to my city. I'm building this new space colony. I can spend this specific currency to quickly finish it instantly
gotcha.
Because it has these properties. But this one faction, the Broken Lords or the Dust Lords or something
yeah.
like that, the Fallen Lords, some
Lords
fantasy
they're
bullshit.
Lords.
Broken
they're
Lords.
Lords.
They're
yeah,
Lords.
Yeah,
they work entirely on that dust. So they're on that dust.
Yeah, I see.
And they
Lords.
And it completely transforms the game for them. Like, it isn't just a +3 to whatever. It's everything they do is about dust. Everything. They don't need to eat. They don't need food. They need dust, and that is it. And it completely changes your economy and the way you interact with the entire map, because like now you're not that interested in finding the food sector, except that, hey, maybe you get a lot of food and you can trade that away for dust.
For more dust.
And like that ends up being a really interesting way of them, it is an Endless Legend, differentiating. So I'm glad to hear that some of that is in Endless Space, too.
It looks like a lot of it's in that game. Now the trade-off for this is... When you have factions functioning so radically differently, it can sometimes make it... I definitely struggle with this in Endless Legend. It can make it really daunting figuring out, like,
yeah.
how does this game actually work? Like, when every faction you choose is basically, like, exhibits a completely different interaction with the core game systems, then you
yeah.
start to wonder, like, what does good play look like? What does effective play look like? Whereas Civ, you play a couple games, and now you have knowledge that applies to every single Civ.
Right, whether you're Spain or England, you understand what a good city basically looks like.
Right, and here you don't really. The last thing I want to call out, and I'm probably going to be talking about this game more in the next couple of weeks, but the thing that is really intriguing me is that there's also an internal politics model.
Right.
And everything you do affects the popularity of different factions. Your industrialists, your militarists, your scientists, and they form their own like political parties. And so the balance of power in your empire, your Senate, will start to shift, and different factions will sort of take charge. And depending on who is in charge and how long they have been there, because as a political party gets like more seasoned and has been in power for longer, they sort of tech up and they're allowed to do like more advanced policies. You can like pass different laws that apply hugely different effects across, like, empire-wide. And so that's
okay.
One of the really cool things is I was going all in on industry, but because I started investing a lot in, like, making planets more habitable and cultivating more food, I've got a pretty sizable environmentalist party taking shape within my, like, yeah. And so, like, suddenly I wanted the scientists to become my secondary party. Scientists aren't even on the board. They're practically irrelevant. But now it's, like, aggressive industrialists and, like, militant environmentalists. And
but wow.
I think that can go some interesting places, but for now what it means is I've got this really interesting menu of policy options that I can choose from, but if one of those parties ever loses power and sort of vanishes out of the Senate, you lose those laws. They're gone.
Gotcha. So you're kind of getting bonuses because they've been in power, and the risk of losing them isn't just that they'll turn on you or something. It's that you lose the verb. You stop being able to do the thing that you were maybe relying on for quite some time. And for whatever reason, maybe you haven't invested in that sort of technology in a while or that sort of advancement. That's really interesting. I'm very interested in putting down some time with that game this week.
Maybe we should stream it.
Yeah, we should probably stream
that
it at some
fun.
Point. That could be good. We'll try to look into it. We'll look into it. We'll see. Can we go to the question bucket?
We have can, like, do a very quickie.
We have 7 minutes left.
So there's a whole story associated with this one, but I'm going to cut it short. Ted, thank you, Ted, for bringing this in.
If you have a question, you can send it to gamingadvice.com. Use the subject questions, and we'll see.
Yeah, questions. So Ted was playing Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn, and this is his question. He started seeing different things in the games. I'll read the very last part. Both Horizon Zero Dawn and Zelda Breath of the Wild are great games. I don't necessarily think comparing them is fair, even though I see why it has happened so frequently. But I found it interesting how each one influenced my feelings about the other. And he had a whole bunch of thoughts about, going back and forth between the two. The controls were so different. He started sort of seeing seams and seeing things through the cracks of Breath of the Wild that, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn was maybe a little smoother on. Mm-hmm. And also sort of the grandeur of Breath of the Wild was also, you know, not necessarily as apparent in the same way in Horizon Zero Dawn. So his question is, if any of us have experienced something similar where one game, if you're playing something simultaneously or right after the other, or even if it's years apart, informing your opinions of a different game, even if it's a completely different type of game.
Yeah. I think that happens to me literally all the time.
Yeah.
That's like constantly all of it. Like, we had this conversation earlier in a sense, right? Which is the Flint Hook and Dead Cells conversation in which Dead Cells helped Patrick and me, like, oh, okay, this is why I don't like Flint Hook. And then even with what Rob and I were just talking about, Endless Legend is the first time, like, made me rethink what I'd been feeling about that traditional, like, land-based 4X strategy game, specifically because I'd been playing a lot of Crusader Kings 2 at the time, which is a completely different type of game that I thought, like, oh, CK2 is the only sort of, like, traditional strategy game that isn't sci-fi that I like. And then I played Endless Legend and realized, like, oh, actually the thing that's in both of these games is storytelling. Different types, wildly different types, but event-driven, choice-driven, and character-driven, because Endless Legend had characters in it in a way that, like, Civ doesn't really have characters. And so those two games together kind of brought me to a third conclusion, but it wasn't really like, now I don't like this one. It was kind of like, oh, I'm going to synthesize these things and get at the truth of what I like. What about you? What about anybody else?
Yeah, I think earlier this year, and this was partially last year, but I did not particularly care for either of the DLCs for Dark Souls 3, which I think is partially because I don't think they're particularly well-designed DLCs. But the larger point, playing it, was that, you know, I was wrestling with, have I played so many of these types of games that I need a break from, like, the Souls-like, like, the sort of setup? Or is it that I am just so tired of the specific way that Dark Souls as a franchise stacks those things together? And although there are differences between Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3, like, you kind of have to squint at it to see what's happening. It is largely the same type of game put into different settings with some tweaks along the way. And it's like games like Neo and games like The Surge that reminded me, okay, right, like, I... There's a reason when I played Dark Souls 3, I wished I was playing Bloodborne, because what Bloodborne did for me was take the DNA of Dark Souls and, like, just twist it in the right ways that kept what I found interesting foundationally, but mechanically had me trying different things and doing different things. And that's also what I think is successful in both Neo and The Surge, is like taking this sort of core ideas, this DNA of what we call Souls-like, and then spinning it off in their own directions in a way that reminds me, like, okay, it actually is just, I'm tired of Dark Souls. Like, I'm not tired I can still really love these games, but I need them to do something else. If I would be highly disappointed if they announced a Dark Souls 4, because it would mean that it'd be going back to that same stack. And those games reminded me that, in the same way as we were talking about with roguelikes, like, the way that stack is arranged is critically important to understanding sort of why you're bouncing or not bouncing off a single thing.
How about you, Rob? Do you have one of these?
Oh, gosh, like, constantly, because, like, so this past weekend, in the past week and a half, I've played Alpha Centauri, Civilization VI, and Endless Space 2. And each of those, like, it's interesting. I was playing Endless Space 2 and Civilization VI back-to-back, and both were sort of informed by just recently playing Alpha Centauri. And having those sort of three things in dialogue at once really helped me start teasing apart, like, what was working for me in one game and what I found lacking in another. And so it was this really useful series of contrasts, about design philosophy and just changes in time in life of the industry that I found, like, really informative and helpful in helping me, like, formulate my thoughts and reactions to each of these games, particularly Endless Space.
Oh, it's so good. I know we have to go. I could go on with this for 100 years.
I mean, what's a quick one?
Oh, it's all right. I mean, a quick one is how much I love Prey is actually informing certain things to me about Dishonored 2. But that's, you can listen to it on a weekend sometime. Huh. Maybe we talk about that at some point. So,
yeah.
You know.
I should finish Dishonored 2.
Me too. I still haven't
finished
it.
I'm mad at myself. That so many people I know have not finished Dishonored 2, but they did finish Prey, I find really revealing.
It's revealing because if you ask me which I'd rather play in this moment, it would be Dishonored 2. I like that world more. I like those characters. Like, and yet I finished Prey and didn't finish Dishonored 2, which is different times. It's an apples and oranges thing.
It is. Yeah.
But
it's informing me in that same way. Informing my feelings about that game in the same way.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us this week, or this Monday. We'll be back on Friday with another Waypoint Radio.
You want me to do the outro?
I'm still dying. What is happening?
Oh, my God.
Everybody, it has been... The L.A. plague, jet lag.
Choking on car exhaust that ran us over this morning.
That's what's happening.
Boy.
We're dead now, by the way.
Murder.
Patrick and I are ghosts. we are the ones who've been murdered. You catch us on Friday for more Waypoint Radio. Catch us on Wednesday for some permadeath. I have to put up another fucking... I have to put up another vote.
You gotta think of a new torture device.
I'll put up that vote today or tomorrow. What else is going on this week?
Do we have daily Battleground streams?
Daily Battlegrounds. We'll be back tomorrow. We're gonna get that car, Patrick. You and me.
Sometime at Wednesday, we will hopefully have a podcast up kicking off Untitled Video Game Book Club, which we will come up with finalize the name for Wednesday. So... you should play, if you're playing Binary Domain with us, there are 6 chapters in the game.
Yep.
Finish the first 3. Takes about 3.5 hours.
Quick question.
Yeah, it's
how critical is having a working microphone to that experience?
No, turn it off immediately.
You can turn it off.
Okay.
You can turn it off.
Because the game was like, don't even try to play this out of the mic. You missed the whole game.
It's bad.
Turn it off.
I need to try it with the mic just to see what that stuff is like.
Just to get a taste.
Because, like, basically we'll talk on Wednesday.
Yeah.
We'll talk on Wednesday about this. So look for that. You can find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com, et cetera, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can find me on the internet at Austin_Walker on Twitter. Danielle
R.I. on Twitter.
Rob.
At Rob Zachney.
Patrick.
At Patrick Klopik.
Tim Barnes 451 on Twitter. Shout out to Dylan for producing this. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more info about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. That's going to do it for us this Monday. Danielle, what do we tell them?
Be good or be good at it.
Peace.
Mom Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.